Shalom lachem v'todah.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for the New Life Educational Series with Dr. Michael Lyman. Hello, Dr. Lyman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Tal Mandelbaum. Hello, and we're with you together. We're searching for happiness in this series of happiness. We want to take another factor that research indicates that brings happiness in Israel and the world to try to understand what there is there, what we can adopt for our lives that will bring us all, that will also bring us happiness. The subject we want to deal with today is happiness and religion. How religions influence our happiness. Tal, take us into the discussion. I chose a quote that I liked in an article by Katie Butler that really highlights what religion supplied us with in the past. And she says like this, in earlier times, before the factory bells and the train whistles, the systems of change were the things we lived according to, with their limits, the church, synagogue, etc. They gave us habits that encouraged altruism and changed people's character. These were the traditions of the heart. These traditions were part of the village life, and they included events together, times of calculation, remembrance. Everything was taken care of on the Sabbath or Sunday morning. Everything was done on a regular basis. Every hour of the day, starting with the meditation or the singing to the lights at night, it was all planned and blessed, and there was like a ceremony. Everything was organized. Every hour in the day was planned. The religion gave people a community, a framework, and research shows today that people in religion are truly happier. So really, lots of research shows that the amount of religious people that define themselves as happier is much larger than atheists. We see the statistics. It's 62% for the Orthodox, 40% of the traditional religious, and 65%, of the secular, might be the wrong number. It's interesting to see why the religious are happier than the rest of the population. Look, if we take animals, or people that there were in those times before they got the form of man, then their existence, they were in adhesion with nature, meaning they operate in an instinctive manner, what the law of nature dictates to them, and they don't have any question. There's me and the living. There's me and my existence. And whether my life is good or not or bad, or there's no question, there's no difference between the I and nature. And in this manner, we see this is how animals live. A person that develops, the more that he develops, it's as if he's disconnecting and becoming separate from his corporal bodily life, earthly life, and he's more and more has questions about the essence of life, what the source of pain is, if we can prevent it. If we can prevent it, it also looks like the living level. Can we prevent it because it's who's managing me? Is there some source that's managing me? And in accordance with that, is it good or bad? Or if I'm suffering, is there profit, gain, or loss, or punishment? We're saying a person is someone who begins to ask the questions about existence, what animals don't have. And therefore, from the moment we felt it hundreds of thousands of years ago, these questions, we started to answer it in all kinds of ways. And we see that religions is the most ancient culture that we have in humanity, along with a person that began to develop from the monkey. And also according to the wisdom of Kabbalah and before Darwin, it's written in the Arik, by the Ari Kadosh, along with this development, religion started to develop. Faiths, various faiths. But their goal was to give an answer to that question: what am I living for? Why am I living? What's the source of suffering? Is there an answer? Is there some gain in this world, that the next world? All those things is what differentiates a person from animals. And when they searched for answers to these natural questions that come from our development, of course, our egoistic development, because we ask, what am I suffering from? For what's the source of suffering, the lack of security, certainty, what there was today and what will be, the element of time that almost doesn't exist at the level of the animals, instincts that we get from nature. But a person gets this entire perspective from the past and the future. Therefore, what we can say here is that religions are the culture, or I would say the key, the reason for the development of culture, any culture. That a person didn't need to do anything except what protects him, the unknown. And therefore, when we see all kinds of symbols, amulets, even jewelry, at the beginning it wasn't to be pretty, but rather as symbols that protected us, helped us, all kinds of things like that. And therefore, I would say that throughout all of history, until today, religion in all its forms goes along with a person to answer the same questions. Even though hundreds of thousands of years have gone by, at least thousands of years that we know, and religion in accordance with that is developing along with the development of these questions in person, and a person is developing with these questions because his ego is developing and demanding more of an answer. And therefore, until today, we go like this. We need to take into account the aspect of inner attributes of each civilization in America, Australia, or Africans, or the Far East, or Europe. What's happening here? So in each and every one, according to their attributes, the religions, faiths, that has to do with nature, the framework of life, that they have to believe in this and not that, depends what a person is dependent on. But we see that actually the environment and the external environment that we live in is what shapes religion. and all the religions until Abraham's time were very simple religions connected to the forces of nature. To wind, to rain, they pray to the sun, the moon, etc. Until today, we can see these things as symbols in a person turning to the unknown, to the stars. In our day, astrology is talked about a lot in the media, featured in the media, and psychologists use it, and the opposite. Astrologers use psychology. There's a mix, an interesting mix that needs to find its research. But whatever happens, we can differentiate between all these different techniques and the religion of Abraham. It's something that's disconnected from nature, from the forces of nature, the environment that a person lives in, is stuck to, but is already speaking about his inner world and his connection to the unknown force, which is very, very special and really comes as a revolution, an unnatural revolution. Because to reach, let's put it like this, of course it's a special revelation of the force of nature, the upper force of nature that manages us, but a person from scratch is not capable of discovering it himself, but actually only the opposite, that this force reveals itself to a person. And therefore, it's a special case. That despite him working with various forces and luck and stars, and was in Babylon and made statues and bowed down to them and sold them, he used to do what the developed part of humanity did at that time. But what happened in his revolution is this inner thing that he went through, which is the revelation of the upper force, because our person by himself, according to our nature, our ego, our desire to receive, can only believe in all kinds of forces, can disturb him from enjoying more, enjoying less. And here we see that he opens, maybe he's developing and explaining and teaching a method that is actually completely anti-egoistic, completely unnatural with our nature and all the inanimate, vegetative, animate living. All our reality is the force of the ego, the desire to enjoy at all different levels, static, to maintain itself in a solid manner, or vegetative, to grow and develop itself, or living, to maintain itself and multiply, etc. We're humans, we're all egoistic. According to our ego, a person's ego develops every single day and from generation to generation, and this is how we live. And Abraham developed all kinds of methods, including that path and including Abraham himself, until he discovered the upper force and all the method of attaining the upper force. Everyone would go along with nature, along with the ego. And therefore, it was in a natural way to develop all kinds of things. We're dependent on this. Some volcano opened up, and we bow down to it, etc. And we need ways to protect ourselves. And it also happens with little kids. There was research showing little kids have some inclination to pray. Yes, they do. Do little kids have an inclination to give some sacrifice? They have all kinds of beliefs. It comes naturally. They don't know it at all. But they give a little bit here and there. It's very natural things that come from nature. If I give a bit, I'll get from it. Superstitions, etc. Meaning all the beliefs and religions, beliefs, faiths, before Abraham, they were natural beliefs that grew out of our desires, and they really developed, and that's why people accepted them in an easy manner. It was very natural in a person's life, dancing, signs on the body, all the jewelry. And it all developed after these beliefs. Abraham changed the whole approach completely. And actually, we don't digest until now what revolution he did. He says like this, you don't need to bow down to nature. You don't need to give gifts to God, which is nature in geometry. You don't need to be afraid of him in an egoistic manner. Meaning all the forms that we used to do, we need to break all our statues. That's what the term means, to break our statues, all our attitude from our nature toward the upper world, toward the unknown, death, heaven, health. We need to erase everything. All those things are rubbish. They're a complete lie. What our ego paints for us, and there's not a grain of truth in it. But what we do have is the opposite force of our nature, which is giving and bestowal and love. And for those to receive those, we need to work. It controls all of nature and above nature. And its influence on us as people. And its goal is to bring us to recognize it according to the law of equivalence of form. And the law of getting close is a similarity of attributes. And we must
לשמת את עצמנו מ
We must change ourselves from the one controlling us now, the force of reception, egoistic for myself, for the sake of myself only, in my consciously, unconsciously at all levels, in all directions, it's me. But there's a special body of knowledge called the wisdom of Kabbalah, which is the foundation of all the other wisdoms that came out of it. We'll speak about that later.
Mm-hmm.
That allow a person to change his nature to the opposite. And then he'll be similar to God, to that same force of love and bestowal, to that great giving that exists beyond our world. And we need to yearn for that. The man in us, it's not just our questions, how we live and how we can live better. We're not far from animals, but the man part of us is that same inclination to that same attribute of love and bestowal that exists outside of our nature. It exists here and now, it's in every place, this force, but we are not revealing it, we're not feeling it because it's the opposite of our attributes, but it's the foundation. So in order to get to know it, we reach an understanding and a feeling. What happened in the past, the present, the future, what's the reason for everything, and what's the end of everything? Because this force alone is what's acting, and it's all our material, inanimate, vegetative, animate, human. And then he also developed a system. Not that he developed, he discovered there's nothing to develop here, like from scratch, but rather to discover more and more what's happening. And then he discovered that we can get closer to this force by connecting. And therefore, the first attribute that we need to develop between us is chesed, compassion. And ever since then, we've been saying the chesed of Abraham, which means that I'm taking part in the internalness of each and every person, as if it's myself. I'm trying to feel him as myself. In good or in bad, I try to understand his weaknesses and all his attributes, the good and the bad as one, a person as he is within himself, and attempt as much as possible to get close to him and bring him closer. People, that's on the one hand. The second thing, people who have such an inclination of chesed, meaning an inclination to connect between them, to discover the connection between them, the force, this upper force, must do this. We need to build some community, some group. And therefore, what he did started gathering communities, as Rambam writes, in many communities in Babylon.
And
And he explained to these people that this can only be achieved by the connection between people, like the minyan, 10 people, or the Beit Knesset, the synagogue. Beit is a vessel that gathers all the people together so that in the right connection between one man and another, in chesed, that connects them, they can discover the upper force. And they tried and they discovered in those times there were not egoistic people like there are now, because they would grow gradually throughout history. And therefore, that's what they did. So this great community that came up as a result of its activity is the House of Abraham. And it was big. Rambam writes that it was about 5,000 people that disconnected from Babylon and went to the land of Canaan. But we need to understand that it's just a small part. That it's people from what about the rest of the world that are in all kinds of faiths? And then Abraham started to explain that the advancement starts to be and needs to be according to a process, a special process, that we need to always do some kind of group, a limited group, that's coming to implement this spiritual act, meaning we need to change the inner spirit of a person. That's why it's called spiritual, meaning instead of reception, then a spirit to give, instead of competitiveness, replace it with love and compassion. And afterward, others will get closer. And those that can't get close in the meantime, they need to deal with all kinds of beliefs. Some are not from Babylon, some were in Africa in the meantime, and in the whole world.
In Australia,
all over, in every place, we see people were living according to, also according to archaeology.
As אנחנו רואים ש. מה שהוא עשה, הוא גם כן.
We see that what he did.
אמונות.
He founded beliefs.
בכל זאת היו איכשהו מקרבים את האדם.
It somehow brings a person closer.
לאותו כוח השפעה והנתינה.
To that same attribute of love and bestowal. It says he gave something to and sent them to the land. And truly you can say that throughout time many methods developed there. Of course the ego was controlling them. But in the meantime, people developed. And this is how Abraham would deal with his group that disconnected along with him from Babylon. And developed them and organized them in a way that they would be a group that would implement his approach. His Torah, meaning his instructions, that they need to connect in the correct manner to be similar to the upper force, and that he, according to our efforts, will influence us. There's very interesting work here. I precisely need this work with the ego, because to the extent that I give forces to rise above the ego, to this extent I'm giving efforts, I'm making yigya, I'm rising above my egoistic desire to receive, and I'm acting the opposite way, to give, to annul myself, to connect with everyone, to be with everyone, to organize a group, society, a community where everyone's equal, that everyone's integrated in one another. And when this is how we act, he said, then in accordance with that, according to the law of equivalence of form, we're inviting on ourselves this light. Which law? The law of equivalence of form. That if I try to be in the same form, the same nature, the same characteristic as the general force of nature called Elohim, God, then according to how much I try, according to the efforts I made, according to the stress involved, the extent that I try to rise above my ego, this is how the light, this force, this light, let's say like a field of force, it influences me. It's sort of like a magnet, it radiates. And this is how it works on a person. In other words, he founded actually the aspect of the group, the community, the connection. If we can say prayer, what's prayer? That everyone is thinking, everyone's yearning, everyone's directed in their desires, their thoughts, to some single term of the general connection that's called mutual guarantee, our avut, which is the integration of people inside one another in such a manner that everyone is integrated in others, supporting others, until they all feel as one. Because our avut is called you instead of me and me instead of you. And then we cancel the ego in this manner, and we connect in this mutual manner. And then this power operates on us, especially it will become clear. It became clear in the days of Moses. That same method, of course, but in a more clearer manner and more detailed manner, because in the meantime, the ego that's in the group of Abraham and the group itself grew according to quantity and also according to the egoistic quality. In the meantime, the group of Abraham throughout history, since it left Babylon and onward, it grew. And in this and this many years, few hundred years, they reached a state where the ego between them was truly big. Abraham died, after him there was Isaac, Jacob, and then Joseph, and then Moses. And in the days of Moses, the ego grew to such an extent that they had a problem of dealing with it. They would begin getting, instead of a connection, into distance and conflicts and competitions between them. And they had to do something about it, because they could have really gotten ruined and gone back to the state of they were in Babylon. And here I think it was a very special moment that we called leaving Egypt, that truly in this great effort that Moses organized for them, somehow the people, he did everything. They overcame the gaps between them, this rip in society, despite all the darkness. that they had among them still to somehow connect and rise above this separation, that rising above this separation, this emotional rising above, is called exiling Egypt, meaning we're not talking about geography or history. We're talking about the internal situation that happens in that same group of Abraham that's going from situation to situation. Through generations, of course, it doesn't matter in which way they live, but we're talking about the inner situation in them. They may have exchanged a few places in the desert or the forest or next to the ocean. What's important is the situation between them, a certain technique, yes. They've reached a state of happiness that you described. Hang on a sec. And then when they overcame that big ego that broke out between them, they discovered, Moses discovered, that he was a leader, and it's always like that, that there's one person that is like the head of the group, that he revealed to them, again, that same trend and same laws. It's not some new Torah, but the situation itself is new. That if they overcome now, their huge ego that in the meantime developed between them, that if they again reach our mutual responsibility, a general integration, they're willing to be as one man with one heart, where everyone is friends, then they will be called Israel, Yashar Kel. And in this manner, they can direct themselves to that same force, that unknown force, that not felt. What do you mean, unknown and not felt? And in this way, they can get his help to attract him to the extent that they're attracted to him from the connection between them. The more they connect between them, to the extent that this force operates on them, it's revealed inside where it's sitting. It's above. It's everywhere, but it's revealed in this material as its foundation. And this is how Moses taught them. And this is how they succeeded. Of course, there were big struggles against the ego, but the ego helps. When you overcome it precisely according to the extent of the ego and the extent of overcoming it and according to the extent of overcoming it, there's this help from the upper force, and then you rise up and you start to feel themselves as existing in a wider world above the material, egoistic material, all of reality. The new reality is opened up to them, that is managed by the force of bestowal and love and not the force of reception. And then they begin to live at a different level of life. And then they feel happy. Why? Because they don't feel the lacking, that there's something missing, that there's suffering, that I've less than another. Maybe he's better, and maybe I'm not. His kids are not my kids, etc. Everything that makes our life rotten is the competition between us. Really, subconsciously, whether we like it or not, I cannot look at another as another. I never saw you, ever. I see you through my ego. And then immediately I see the eyes, the nose, the ears. It's all I see through my ego. And I'm not capable of seeing otherwise. Meaning the entire world is actually going through this network, this egoistic network, and I'm filming it through this screen, and that's how I relate to it. And that's why it appears dark to me, and it's always pressuring me, and it's making my life bitter. And it makes me so concerned, and I'm uncomfortable, and I'm never full. I'm never happy. What am I missing? What am I missing? That I always have to measure, to check. Am I not missing anything? Does someone have more than me? And if it's more than me, I somehow have to cover it with something, make up for it with something. And I have to make sure that it's not less. I'm always checking myself compared to everyone else, and my ego is always growing. Not just me, my family, all my property. It's terrible. We don't even know how to live otherwise. That's what I wanted to ask. What's it like to live without it? How do I live when I'm clean from all this? It means heaven. It's very simple. And apart from that, what's dear, that I feel my life as short, ending with death, and to provide myself with some kind of compensation for that, some kind of image of life of the future. What will happen with me after death? And then I invest a lot of time thinking, what's happening with me? What will happen after me? How people will be after I leave here, and how they will accept me there after I arrive. And to make a long story short, our life with all this confusion becomes very difficult. And in attaining the upper force, a person starts to receive a completely different form, that he gets rid of all his concerns, all his problems. He has no difference. This world, the next world, heaven or hell, the creator, the creature, all these definitions take on another form of significance. And this is how he advances himself to be eternal, to be complete, like this upper force. If he, above his force of reception, acquires the force of bestowal. Therefore, this approach of Abraham's is not to believe, not to do some, not to do amulets, which is all kinds of means, protective means, all those things, not red strings, holy water, all kinds of forms, symbols, nothing except a person's inner work. And actually, a person can be naked. He shouldn't have anything but just his inner work, his work in the heart. The heart is called a collection of all the egoistic desires, evil inclination, that we need with that same light. It's called the light that redeems us. And it's called, like God said to Moses, I created the evil inclination, the ego, and the solution, the light that comes and redeems him. That this light transforms this evil inclination to good, and to good. Meaning from reception to bestowal, from hatred to love. And then it turns out, according to all these systems, that a person doesn't need anything, any symbols, But just, the person doesn't need all these things, but just to work on his heart, that it will soften and connect with all the other hearts. And still, how many people can hold on to this? How many people have this inclination for this work in the heart, that they'll feel that it's the most important thing? How many? Altogether, only a few people in the world. And we see that throughout history, that there were dozens, hundreds of people. Maybe there were times when there are a few thousand. But what is this quantity compared to the billions in the world? How is it possible that everyone can change their nature? And therefore, in order to bring the whole world to this desired correction, that they'll receive this upper force, meaning that they'll turn from this same light that redeems us, that happens in connection, in our inclination to connect that's being revealed, to give everyone an opportunity. There is a very special act happening, that even that group of Abraham, it goes into destruction, that whole great mutual desire and love and bestowal and attaining this great spirituality and discovering this upper force and connecting with it, it suddenly breaks. And this love breaks out between them, and this hatred breaks out. And in this situation of breakage, they start to get close, actually, to the nations of the world, to the Babylonians that disperse throughout the world. And they start all kinds of connections. And those same Babylonians grasp from the people of Babylon how much they can grasp in a corporal manner, in a primitive manner, in all kinds of one-sided ways. To take what they can, everything that's worth it. And this is how they formed all kinds of religions. First of all, Christianity, and then Islam. First of all, Christianity, yes. And there we see there's all kinds of factions between them, and we see how many religious wars there were up till now, even though the Christianity is aged, but the Islam, everything's on fire, and we see that the wars are not over. We hope that everything will come quickly to the true verification, that we, according to our entire calculation, as a result of that same group of people, they go from that broken place and they need to learn again how to connect to a group as one heart in Arvut, to discover in this connection between us this upper force that will influence us to transition from reception to bestowal, from hatred to love. And in that, to show the entire world that it's possible, that this is the correct manner, that it's not Judaism and not Islam and not Christianity and not a superstition. It's a new technique of changing a person in accordance with God to the upper force. And this is where we are today. Of course, if we're talking about happiness, it can only be attained in this manner. And it can only be attained in a theoretical manner, because throughout these 200 years of galut that we fell from the lever of love and connection that we were to a place where we dispersed among the people, that we were close to them in competitiveness and hatred, we planted in all the nations really sparks of bestowal. What do you mean, a bestowal? The sparks of love of your fellow man. An inclination to similarity to the upper force. Therefore, if today we make an example of the group of Abraham, and through us we can attract the light that redeems us, we can attract it to us, and also in our dissemination, and our groups around the world will begin to show everyone how we do it, and in this manner we'll reach that same corrected Babylon, what Abraham wanted to do. That is actually our work. And then we'll reach true happiness, because a person gets rid of all his fears and anxieties, this whole crisis in education, culture, at home, education of children, all his problems, health, ecology, everything, and he reaches a situation where he feels eternal and complete, like the upper force. He has no questions about life and death, because he's at a level where he's looking at the end of life and sees everything. He doesn't feel limited. He gets new attributes, a new perspective from the level of God at the world, and not the level of a little animal here, poor little animal that doesn't know what to do and how to escape at any moment from trouble that each time is falling on it. That is actually the real attainment of happiness. But we didn't speak about religions. That's what we'll talk about in another talk. But what's interesting in the research that we found, that of course they don't have this, even religions that don't have this technique, those elements that make a person happy. They're also talking, if we're talking about religions, they took a lot from the system of Abraham. But instead of raising the ego to this level, they took a few elements for the good of the ego. And they're actually not doing anything with it except their painting the ego in all kinds of nice forms. It's as if there's all kinds of things there, that even though you're saying it still isn't the full implementation, you can feel that there's something there in the community, in the framework, social framework, the fact that a person's in a religious framework, it's psychology. It doesn't have anything to do with religion. Religion is something that has to be disconnected from a person's psychology that comes from above. And these are the regular types of psychology that we're together, singing together, doing events together every Sunday or Sabbath or Thursday or Friday. Doesn't make a difference. These are things that a person, from his natural inclination, he would do. Not necessarily, it doesn't have to do with a certain religion, meaning the whole community, meaning every religion took it and implemented it. Because still a person, especially when religion started to disappear, the beginning of the 20th century, a person looked for other means to reach happiness that it disappeared. So the secular psychology came that's freer, gave us a feeling that we have more choice, but it didn't really give a practical method because we didn't have the technique. We thought we could control ourselves. We thought we know psychology and genetics. Like I quoted at the beginning, of the 20th century, when we replaced all the community things with McDonald's and supermarket, all the traditions of the heart that we had, as she said, they've been forgotten. It's like we're missing that situation of certainty, of security that we had once upon a time. And the secular people are like confused. We have so many options. We can choose what we want to be. But modern psychology, the methods that we have today don't really give us the answer how to do it. Meaning they haven't really given us something to replace it with, but we've reached a situation where there's nothing to replace. We're at a place of uncertainty. So now you're saying the real happiness is somewhere there in the source where everything began. It's interesting. We'll continue speaking about it. What makes us happy in our situation of today is faith. You're saying in the days of Abraham there wasn't faith, but according to research, this is what makes a person very happy. Yes, but it's like a child, meaning that I complete uncertainty with something that has no foundation, but rather has support, social support, and this completes my certainty. Meaning, if everyone says, that's enough for me, that gives me security. It's possible that it's a complete lie. But it's the influence of the environment on a person. The entire religion is based on that. And then I receive what the environment says to me. You also think like that? Yes. You also think like that? Yeah. So it becomes a fact for me. Meaning everything in the world. Now in the sky, there's a suitcase going around and it's spraying something on the world. I'll believe it if a few people talk to me about it, and I'll believe that that's how it is. A lot of people are sarcastic about the religions. They also believe just those that are religious, they get these habits from their childhood. And those that didn't get it, they have those. They have their own beliefs. Because there's a very revealed way to be only materialistic a person can be, because he subconsciously has to answer. He's not aware of it, but he subconsciously has to answer, what am I living for? What is the point of life? What's waiting for me after I die soon? He has to answer. So either he's hiding each time, or he answers without being aware of it. He still has to answer these questions. Without this, our machine won't work. And therefore, these questions are significant. There's no person that's not religious. There's no such thing, because he has to complete himself with these eternal questions, because he's a person, he's not an animal. If he acted only according to instinct, he's an animal, there's no problem. But if there's something beyond it, and everyone has something beyond, each and every person, then he has questions. I live, I die, I'm like this, I'm like that. What's after that? What's before? He has to answer this uncertainty, what's happening every day. He has to complete himself. Why is this happening? Why is that happening? Why did I lose that? Otherwise, he has to live like an animal. We can open it up if you want, but there's no person that's not religious. Some people got this from birth, and some people learn it from life, throughout life. They give themselves all kinds of beliefs or close themselves in a way that they give an instinctive answer inside and get rid of all these questions from their head, and this is how they live. But still, it's also a matter of religion. Yes, but okay, now we're going to conclude. We think that everyone, whoever they are poor people. The only happy person can be someone at the level of the Creator. And that can raise them up, and the wisdom of Kabbalah can raise them up to that, and to the rest of the world, the integral education. Thank you, Tal. Thank you for being with us on the way to happiness and new life. All the best.